Welcome one and all, you're listening to the Best in Belfast podcast, and with just me this week, Anthony. Jared is busy today. He is actually celebrating his wedding anniversary to Grania, so happy anniversary, G. Hope you have a really good day. With me today, I have one of, in my opinion, and this show's all about opinions, one of the best, if not the best, sports therapist Belfast has to offer. Just to show you how good he is, some of the clients that he's hosted or worked on, Mick Conlon, guest of the show and friend of the show, Brendan Irvine, James Gallagher, the Strab Animal from Bellator, Belfast's strongest man, I think he's Ireland's strongest man, and maybe the UK's as well, Michael Downey. And you've worked as well with Carl Frampton. He works with a lot of other top boxing and sports athletes, whether it's people from MMA community, boxing, or people who are into weightlifting, powerlifting, things like that. We'll go through it on the show, some of the things that he does specifically. But welcome to the show, Kieran May from CM Sports Survey.
Thanks very much, Anto. Thanks for having me, and congratulations to Jared.
So, Kieran, you work in...
Commiserations.
No, Grania's lovely. So, you work in XL Gym?
That's right, yes. I have my own room, but basically I am based in XL Gym, which is in the Cuts, just in Dunmurray there. And I'm upstairs on the second floor.
XL Gym, great facility. We had Tommy on, I think it was a year and a half ago. Jesus, time flies. Most people are familiar with XL Gym. That's how I met you. I've talked about you on the podcast before and put it on my Instagram story. What area was it, would you call it? It was like your neck and my shoulder, sort of.
I think it was like a shoulder injury, like your shoulder almost, you weren't getting the full range of motion in one of your shoulders anyway. Kind of your traps and upper back and neck, and that was very tight, if I can remember correctly.
Yeah, and I mean, like, it was to the point where I couldn't even lift my own son. I know that sounds so stupid, and for you to go and do what you done within that first hour, and afterwards, like, the amount of happiness that you brought me. See, even wee simple things. Like, remember the video I sent you, getting the seatbelt on?
That's right. Yep, I remember that.
For me, what I had to do to put my seatbelt on, I had to turn around and lean in to the car seat and use my left hand to pull my seatbelt around. Most people, you take for granted, you go to put a seatbelt on, you lift your hand up, you reach backwards, and you pull it forwards. I couldn't do that. I couldn't see any tension burn thing or overreaching, anything like that, I couldn't do, or I'd done it with fear. And it severely limits what you can do on a day-to-day basis. So thank you for one. I know it sounds stupid, but for me being able to lift my son without fear, you know, it's frightening how easy mobility can go. Talk about some of the therapies that you offer.
Okay, so I kind of try and do things a wee bit different, try and think outside the box. Think of the body as in like a layered approach. So generally we try to use several different therapies or ways of treating the body in one session. But what we'll do is we'll speak with the client, find out what their injury is, how it happened, what the work is, what their routine consists of. And we'll do some kind of range of movement tests with them. And then we will maybe do the likes of deep tissue or sports massage, acupuncture, dry needling, cupping therapy. The list goes on. It's endless. There's no one set criteria because everyone's body's different. We're all different shapes and sizes. So as you were talking there, from maybe a small bantamweight boxer or the likes of Michael Downey, who was at the time, I think, 165 kilos when he was in. Everyone's different. I would say the bread and butter, you're probably talking the likes of assisted stretching and massage, deep tissue stuff, you know, to really get the blood pumping through muscles and getting rid of inflammation and stuff.
Okay. See, for anybody listening, see 100, you said he's about 100, Michael Downey, the strongest man, 165 kilos. That's near 360 pounds. That is mad. How do you operate on a big fella like that?
Michael's brilliant to work with. Very, very smart, very, very determined athlete. He's Ireland's strongest man. He's just recently broken the British dumbbell record. And he broke that record none other than Eddie Hall. Eddie Hall owned the record before him. He's currently the biggest log press in the UK and Ireland. I think 200 kilos with potential to do a lot more. It's kind of just getting to know the person too, I think, is, you know, when you have that bit of personable relationship with a person and know their body, getting to know their body over time. But no, Michael was a pleasure to work with. I've worked with him on the run up to him breaking the British dumbbell record and the Irish log press record. Don't get me wrong, an hour session or an hour and a half session with somebody that big and carrying that much muscle, it's tiring. Generally try to fit him in before lunchtime, because I would have had to take a break after it. You know, you are putting a lot of effort in. Somebody like that requires a lot of effort. And obviously you want them walking away feeling as if they've got the best service they could have got. But Michael was an absolute pleasure to work with. Very, very good athlete. And I think he's back training at the minute. I know he's other records he's going for, and I've no doubt whatsoever. I was actually talking to him yesterday. He claimed Sleeve Donard last week or the week before. He's down to 150 kilos at the minute, but we were talking about kind of strength and endurance. And I don't think many people will appreciate how hard it's actually to carry 150 kilos up the biggest mountain in Northern Ireland. One thing he said to me was he felt like quitting, but if he was going to quit at that, he'd quit at other things throughout life, and that's just his typical mindset. He's only 27, 28, and already he's breaking numerous records, and he's a great fellow in the bargain too. So, no, he was a pleasure to work with.
See, just come back to some of the therapies that you do a couple of different types of massage. You do CBD massage and other forms of massage, isn't that right?
Yeah, so they all kind of stem. Massage goes back thousands of years. It was used by ancient civilizations for treating injuries, relaxation. It's like an ancient form of a holistic and natural way of treating the body, just like yoga, acupuncture, all these things go back thousands of years. Deep tissue, I suppose, is just a fad term, but ultimately you're putting more pressure and getting deeper down into the muscle. Sports massage, again, generally a term, but the massage is kind of the one technique, but there's different ways of doing it. I was one of the first ones that I'm aware of to do the CBD massage. And again, it was just keeping things natural. CBD to me was a great natural ointment as such with anti-inflammatory benefits. So I thought it was the next thing to start implementing in the training. And you get a lot of people just that maybe aren't sports stars or athletes, people that just want to switch off at times. And that's the thing, the name CM Sports Therapy, I think it puts some people off, but I treat everyone from Joe Blogs of an interest in sports and sports psychology and sports injuries. But sometimes people just want to come in and switch off. Maybe they're suffering from a wee bit of anxiety or stress. And I think that's a point that a lot of people don't grasp with their bodies. The people always say to me, what's the number one injury you see? Is it, I take it, it's back or shoulders? But to me, the number one injury is stress related. Stress is a killer, literally. And I think sometimes people just want to come in and chill out and get the likes of a sports massage done with CBD oil and just let them come home and relax and recover almost, to switch off.
See, with the anxiety, that's one of the questions that come up. I will circle back to that, and I'll go, because I know you have treatments and things for that, and that, just at the minute I want to go through all the different types of therapies. See this one, right? Explain this the way you did to me when I was getting it done, as if you're going through with all the, because as if you were doing it on me, right? Cupping, right? See, whenever I put the photos up of cupping, everybody messaged me. Not that I'm a wee influencer or anything, but you know, people always go, "Is that looks sore? That looks sore." And I'm like, "Why would it be sore?" Explain how cupping works and the principle of it, and why it's not sore.
Okay, so cupping again goes back thousands of years. It's almost revered in the East. So you're talking China, Tibet, all that part of the world. They talk about an energy flow throughout the body called qi. And what they use cupping for thousands of years ago was to remove stagnated qi in the body. So they believe that through illness or injury, you could have blockages of energy in the body. And they use cupping therapy to remove the blockages of this energy. So there's different forms of cupping. The original form in the East was called hijama. And what they did was they pierced the skin and they actually pulled out blood. They pulled out that stagnant blood. And when you do it, it's almost like a jelly. Now, we don't do it here because it's very hard to get insurance for it. But what I do is called dry cupping. And a small kind of plastic cups, and you place them on the muscles and you remove the air from the cup and it creates like a vacuum. And that pulls your muscle up into the cup and it leaves bruises. So I think when you put the pictures up, you have bruises all over your back. Mm-hmm. And that is probably that is what puts people off. They see these bruises and think, oh my God, that's sore. But the bruising is actually capillaries, kind of, it's almost causing like micro trauma on the skin. And because it's pulling so much blood into the area, it's also pulling toxins and your lymph and all out too. So you'll see areas that are really, really tight. The bruises are actually darker and deeper. So you can tell different things by the bruising. And I think up around your bad shoulder at the time, you had big, dark, deep purple bruising. Mm-hmm. And that's just where all that stagnant blood and all those toxins were kind of thriving. But again, it's just a natural way of treating the body. And what I try and do with cupping, depending on the client, is add in a bit of functional movement as well. So we can start breaking up all that tight muscle that hasn't been used in its full capacity in a while. So we'll maybe place on the cups and get them to move with resistant bands or go through certain stretches or routines with the cups on. But it's a treatment that I like doing because you see good results with it.
Yeah. So in effect, that is basically getting the muscle, pulling it, stretching it, and letting the blood flow, new blood, get in to stimulate the muscle?
Yeah, so there's if you imagine cutting your skin open on your arm and people think they would see a red muscle, but on top of that red muscle, you have what's called fascia. And fascia covers your whole body from head to toe. And what you're doing is you're pulling that fascia up and you're allowing it to kind of relax. And when it goes back down, it's recovering into its own natural state again, covering the muscle. So it's kind of getting rid of scar tissue before it forms. But what people forget is blood carries all the oxygen and nutrients. So when you have a tight muscle, it's starved of oxygen, it's starved of nutrients. But with the cupping, you think with massage, you're pushing in. So I'm pushing into your muscle, whereas with the cupping, you're pulling out. But you're pulling out with such a ferocity because the cup's attached to it that you're just pulling a vast amount of fresh, oxygenated, nutrient-rich blood into that muscle. It's almost like an MOT for a muscle, so to speak. You're getting rid of all the bad and just filling it with new, fresh blood. That fresh blood's just full of oxygen and therefore full of life for the muscle. It just allows it to kind of, it's feeding the muscle with all its goodness. Sorry, go ahead.
It helps it rejuvenate almost.
Massively. It's really, really good for muscle recovery. And you see it getting quite big now with the likes of UFC stars and that, you know, especially with social media, they're almost showing off their cup and bruises. So you'd see the likes of Conor McGregor and Khabib, you know, premiership footballers and that, a lot of them are getting this cup and therapy done for muscle recovery. So it's definitely gaining popularity again. I think it became mainstream in professional sports probably, I think it was 2008. Michael Phelps, the swimmer, he, in one of the Olympics, he was covered in these bruises. And they're circular bruises, so they're not like a bruise or what's it. They're very, very distinct. You'll maybe have several perfectly circular bruises around the body. Why it's covered in these circular bruises. And lo and behold, it was cupping therapy, and different athletes and coaches were asking what it was. And obviously, Michael Phelps is a multiple Olympic medalist. So if it was good enough for him, it was good enough for them. And it has become quite popular again in the West.
And see, whenever you were doing it on me, you had like that big blade. Is that a separate, or is that going coincide with the cupping?
No, that's separate. So again, going back to ancient times, it's a technique called gua sha, and all these techniques have been used in the Eastern. Blade is made of stainless steel. We scrape it up and down the muscle. So there's a number of different names for it. One of it is muscle scraping. You're scraping out any scar tissue before it starts to form, but you're also causing micro trauma on the skin, and you're encouraging again loads and loads of fresh blood into the area. And you're kind of kickstarting a recovery process. So you're tricking the body to think that there's more injury there than what there is, and it starts that whole process of healing the muscle. But again, just a nice natural technique to treat the body.
And you have here, you do dry needling as well.
So dry needling is it's not acupuncture, but it's a take on it, so to speak. So acupuncture has been around thousands of years. Dry needling is the westernized version of acupuncture. So the talk about muscle knots. So everyone's heard of muscle knots, but what that is, it's kind of like a bundle, a myofascial bundle in the nerve, in the muscle. And what you do with the dry needling is you put the needle into the knot, and almost break up the knot with the needle. What I do is I would add a wee bit of an electric current in it as well, so you can stimulate the muscle. So if you think of the body as a kinetic chain, everything's connected. So as I was saying to you, you had a shoulder injury, but your neck was suffering, mm-hmm. Your lats, your back. It's the same as, you know, the fast. They tell you when you're studying the body that the solution to the problem will either be above or below the area. So we see with like low back pain, that person might have tight glutes and tight hamstrings. The problem is actually a different part of the body. And muscles can become overactive or underactive. And the dry needling with the electric current is a great way of kind of stimulating muscles again. Muscles that maybe aren't being used because other muscles are more dominant. It just allows them to kind of reactivate and start firing again. It's a very, very good technique. I love the needlework. I love working with the dry needles and the acupuncture.
Sound like a wee bit of a sadist.
I know, as people come in, there's metal blades and needles and cups and all the rest of it, but this, all these techniques, they're kind of, you know, you can go to a doctor now and say, my back's sore, and get handed tablets. You can get handed painkillers. Or, in fact, I was talking to a friend of mine, he's suffering from migraines, and he went to the doctor last week, and they tried to give him antidepressants. So allow these, all these devices between the needles and the stainless steel blades and the cups and all the rest of it, they look a bit odd or a bit mad for somebody that hasn't maybe read up or isn't aware of these techniques. They're natural. Do you know what I mean? You're not pumping or ingesting any chemicals into your body. They're all natural forms of working with the body that's been around for thousands of years. And it's trying to just remain holistic and natural when treating the body.
So we'll move on then. Is there any other therapies that you want to talk about? It's just, you touched on a subject there I was going to go into, but...
Go ahead, Anto. I'll just go with you, mate.
See the way you were talking about there, your friend, and how, like, if you go to the doctor, the first thing that they want to do is give you a chemical, give you a tablet, right? One thing that I'd seen from you was cold shock therapy. And you actually got like an old whiskey bottle and filled it with water and ice. And there's me in lockdown with my cigar and my cider in a hot tub. And I went, what is this lunatic at?
So I've actually had family members.
Go ahead.
I've had family members sit me down and say, have you lost the plot? Is everything okay?
I can understand.
Over the whiskey bottle.
So the whole cold shock thing, apart from all the class photos that you get because you're up at 4 o'clock, 5 o'clock in the morning. I talked about it last week on the podcast with Jared. I'd seen you doing it, getting up, going for swims, jumping into all this cold water, whether it's a rock pool up a mountain or a waterfall or jumping in the sea. Explain, because you have like a process in the mornings, don't you?
Yeah, so I've started a thing of trying to get up at 5 or half 5 in the morning. Sometimes it's earlier. Obviously, some races a bit earlier at the minute, but the cold water thing to me was... it kind of happened by accident about 2 years ago. I used to do a lot of powerlifting. And I had a competition on the Saturday. And when you're kind of, after a competition, you just feel completely zapped. You've put everything into it. And the following day, my wife and I, we took the kids up to Carrickfergus. And we found Glen O' Waterfall, which you took your son to not so long ago. And I'd read up about the benefits, but I remember I felt horrible. I think it actually bust a couple of wee capillaries in my eye from squatting. I just felt hungover, even though I hadn't been drinking. I just felt horrible, and I went, I'm going to give this a go. And I wasn't prepared. I just stripped down to my boxers, and I jumped in, and my wife was shaking her head going, here he goes again, and my kids were laughing. And I stayed in for 5 or 6 minutes, and I got out, and I just felt like a completely new man. The hangover feeling was away. I didn't feel horrible. And I was like, right, okay, there's maybe something to this. And not so long after, in December that year, 2018, I think, my friend was doing a group swim at Helens Bay for the winter solstice. I went down and met her, and there was maybe 12 of us, and we went in swimming. It was really, really cold, but...
Now, sorry to interrupt you there. For anybody that doesn't know, the winter solstice is, was it 21st or 22nd of December?
Yeah, yeah.
So December time, you're going into the sea. Go ahead.
Yeah, so again, I just got out and I felt amazing. I felt unbelievable again. And I thought, right, I'm going to keep this up. So from December, I started going down and swimming in the ocean once or twice a week, right through the winter. And I've just kept it up, and it's probably an addiction maybe, but I love how it makes me feel. And I think in this modern society where it's all go, 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 stress, 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 we're all kind of ruled by technology. I think it's great just to reconnect with nature again. But I would be an overthinker at times. And when I'm in the cold water, I'm just completely present. I've no thoughts really, other than your breath. And I think it's a really, really good place to be. And I'm now at a place where I bring different wee groups down to go swimming and do a bit of breath work with them. And they laugh because they're maybe panicking to jump in and lose their breath, where I just feel free. I just float on the water, just happy as Larry with a big smile on my face. You know, it's great. I'm really, really enjoying it. And I've signed up, stupidly signed up to do an ice K this year, which is to swim a kilometre in ice waters under 5 degrees. So I've my first, I can't swim, by the way. I'm teaching myself how to swim. But I'm going to Loch Ness on Thursday night with a guy who's offered to show me a few techniques for swimming. So that's what's next on the agenda.
What do you mean you don't know how to swim? Do you not know how deep Glen Ull Waterfall is?
Well, I'm confident in the water. I mean, I can doggy paddle and I can breaststroke. I can kind of move about, but with the ice K, you have a certain amount of time to swim a kilometre. So I have never swam properly before. You know, you see them with their face in the water and they're breathing out through their nose in the water and turning their head to the side.
Yeah.
You have to be able to swim that kilometre in a certain time. Otherwise, the doctor pulls you out. So I need to learn how to do that, basically.
Right, okay. Give us a couple of... You're a mad bastard. I don't know if you can swim.
That's the beauty of it. You don't need to swim. A lot of people say, "Oh, I'd love to try, but I can't swim." We have like certain safety measures. So anytime I'm bringing a group down of different weight of toe floats, we floats in that, and we kind of stand up to your neck. So you're never really on safe. And you can just dip. You know, you can even just get down onto your hunkers and just cover yourself with cold water. So you don't really need to be a strong swimmer to benefit from cold water. And I think that's what puts a lot of people off. Yes, you can swim and you can jump into deep lakes and all the rest of it, but if you want to try it, you don't need to swim.
What do you do? Do you like find a shallow point and walk up, or do you just jump in?
So at the start, we were going to Helen's Bay and I was just walking in, and depending on the tide, so if the tide was in, a couple of steps and you could have kind of just dove into the water till kind of your neck and had it over and done with. But when the tide was out, it was like slow torture. Because you were walking slowly and slowly out. Because obviously you have to have it be a certain depth in your body, you know, before you can get down onto your hunkers. Whereas recently I started going to a place called Brompton, where again, I know you were not too long ago. And I'm jumping off the rocks into the sea, which is a different buzz, because once you make that jump, the decision's made for you. You know, your whole body is going from comfortable to uncomfortable in a split second, and it's great. So that's my new thing, is just diving straight in and getting it over and done with.
See, that's what I prefer to do, because whenever I'm up the Glen Ull with Aidan, there's no real good jumping point because it is shallow at the start. So because I had him, I was walking up, and we had that there. You know, once it gets up to your belly button, you start doing that cold breathing. Do you, see when you get in, do you just float, or do you like try and flounder a bit just to get yourself warm?
I think everyone's different. I will generally just, it's relaxing for me. I know that sounds stupid because it's cold water and you're doing it in the winter, but it's now relaxing where I can just float. And as I say, I feel kind of nothing but being present, just in the present moment at that time. So I know people that kind of do that Russian dance and they move their arms and legs in the water to try and get a wee bit of blood around them, where I think now I've just got used to it, where I'm that's that old saying, you're becoming comfortable in the uncomfortable. I'm now just really embracing it, and I kind of just float. And there's times I'm there in the water for 20 minutes. It just feels great.
It really does, because a couple of weeks ago, Brendan Irvine was on, and he was saying about people getting cold showers and standing in like freezing cold showers and people getting addicted to it. And I actually said to him on the podcast, who in their right mind gets addicted to freezing cold showers? And like, whenever I get in that one the first time, I messaged you, I got under the water, I felt like my whole body was in pins and needles. But I just messaged you, I get it. It's so hard to explain, and you, what you're saying is right. You know, people think you're mad, but see, once you do it, I think you just get it.
Yeah. So it's a fear for some people. Some people have a genuine fear of being uncomfortable. Mm. There's people that have a genuine fear of the water, and there's people that do not want it. It's because it's unnatural. It's unnatural against everything. You're brought up to be comfortable. Everything's comfortable. Like, we no longer are hot or cold, or, you know, you feel too cold in the house and you put your immersion heater on, or you put the heating on, you feel too cold. You know, you feel too warm, you can put your air conditioning on. So we're no longer really affected by temperature. We've became almost too comfortable, and people get used to that. And that's what I think the beauty of it is, and the beauty of getting out into nature is experience those kind of extremities again, the real cold of the sea in December and January. It just really, really wakens your senses up.
Definitely. Give us a few spots that you go to. So if people do want to try it, where you would recommend for them?
Yeah, so there's a lot of people have kind of messaged me over the past few months saying I would like to try it, kind of go down and do it with you. And I've never turned anyone away. Before the whole COVID lockdown, where sometimes you're having group sessions, maybe 25, 30 people in Helen's Bay, and we're all going together. I would generally go to Helen's Bay, kind of around that north down coast, Brompton. There's another place called Skipperstone Beach. Bloody Bridge down in Newcastle Harbour, Loch Ness. The beauty of Ireland is we're surrounded by the ocean with loads of rivers, lakes. Ireland's beautiful, like, so we've no shortage of places. I would say everyone is within a 1 hour driving distance of a lake, river, waterfall, or the sea. And for any of the local Belfast people that live close to the XL gym, there's actually an old piggy pool in Colinglane Forest, up kind of behind the Lamb Derg.
Mm-hmm.
It's off the beaten track. And again, it's like you're a million miles away from Belfast. When you're in it, you're surrounded by forest and with a waterfall and a really cold water pool just available on your doorstep. It's amazing.
Yeah. You've also got, you said, Glen O' Waterfall and Glen Arriff Waterfall. The Glen Arriff Waterfall is quite good because it's quite deep. So if you want to jump off, you can do it. Because I brought my friend up there with his two kids and we jumped in. Plus there's a nice wee walk as well on it. The Glen O' one, there's not much walking.
Yeah, this is the thing. I think when you start getting into something like that, you find yourself spending more and more time in nature as well. Mm. And as we touched on earlier, I think now with technology, everyone's kind of glued to their phones or their tablets or their laptops.
Mm-hmm.
Probably don't spend as much time in nature as we used to as a society. So I think it's really, really good to get out and surround yourself with nature and the sunlight. Fresh air. I think it's so, so beneficial for your physical and mental health. I mean, there's no negatives whatsoever. You're becoming fitter. You're becoming stronger. You're spending more time in nature. It's perfect. And it's free as well. It's free therapy. Do you know what I mean?
Definitely, mate. I agree 100% with what you're saying, because I think I spend more time looking down than I do looking up. And it does, you were touching on there about the mental health. Couple of months, was it just before Christmas, you had ran an XL gym, was it the dry needling in the year?
Yeah, so that's the form of acupuncture. It's called NADA. And it became quite popular in New York in the 70s and 80s with the Black Panthers. So it's a way of treating a number of of issues from addictions to anxiety, depression, PTSD. But it's a very, very simple and cheap treatment. So the Black Panthers kind of took it from a group of rural doctors in China called the Barefoot Doctors, who used to go and treat all the poor people. And the Black Panthers, seeing that there was kind of an injustice in America, don't forget in America you have to pay for your healthcare.
Mm-hmm.
So they were like, right, well, Brooklyn, Harlem, Queens, it's just riddled. This was during the kind of crack cocaine epidemic in New York during the 70s and 80s. So they opened up these addiction centers and they trained up people that could do this form of acupuncture, because it's very, very simple. It's just five small needles go in five different spots in each ear. And it's kind of snowballed from there. This treatment's used all over the world from still to this day. I mean, after 9/11, all the first responders were treated at the scene. So that 9/11 scene went on for weeks, over a month actually, of kind of pulling people from rubble and clearing the whole place up. All the first responders were treated with this form of acupuncture. Every refugee camp in the world to this day will have NADA acupuncturists, where people think refugee centers or camps, sorry, that's the people kind of safe now, but actually crime and rape and addiction sky high in a refugee camp. So they have these acupuncture tents that get people in and treat them for addictions. It's probably my favorite treatment to do. It's amazing. It's class. Like, it really, really helps people. And again, it's staying away. I'm not saying anything bad about it. Obviously, we need medication, we need medicine and doctors, but it's perfect for people that haven't got to the really bad stage where they maybe can bypass the medication and there's something holistic and natural to help them.
Yeah, I think one of the things with a lot of people is trying to identify why they're feeling that way and then getting the course of treatment. Again, I've done that not a treatment with you. Thanks for not telling anybody. I was shit scared of the needles. But again, it doesn't hurt in any way or any form. And then you just sort of sit there and it sounds strange, but it's almost a bit like, to me, whenever you've done it to me and you left me there for a couple of minutes, it was almost like being stoned.
Yeah, a lot of people say that. A lot of people say it makes them feel stoned. But what's becoming quite popular now is the anxiety piercing. You see a lot of girls and a lot of guys getting the anxiety piercing. And one of the points that we put, I think people get put off of the word needles, but you've got it done yourself. They're very small, very fine pins almost, and you're putting them in the ear. But one of the points is the Shen Men point, which is the same point where you get the anxiety piercing. And kind of, again, going back to traditional Chinese medicine, they call that the spirit gate. And that wee point alone sometimes just is enough. That's just what people need. And people say it can leave them feeling stoned. But it kind of, the 5 points, you're targeting your sympathetic nervous system, the Shen Men, and then the kidney, liver, and lungs. So three big major organs there too. It's almost creating like balance in the body and mind. And you aim to keep those pins in for 30 minutes to 45 minutes. I've had people falling asleep or people crying, but it's great. It would definitely, if somebody said to me, moving forward, you could only do one treatment, it would be the NADA ear acupuncture without a shadow of a doubt.
Really?
Without a doubt, yeah. If somebody told me you can only do one treatment from here on in, it would be the ear acupuncture.
Interesting. Is there anything else that you think would help people, you know, with their state of mind and their mental welfare, you know, just some quick things that they can do?
I think obviously every case is different. Life can be fast paced and stressful. I would always say to somebody to look and make sure they're getting the basics right first before they self-diagnose themselves with depression, or a doctor diagnoses them with depression or anxiety. Make sure that they're getting the basics right first. So are they sleeping enough? because your body and your mind repairs when you're in sleep, when you're sleeping. There's a whole hormonal process that only happens when you're asleep. And a lot of us aren't getting enough sleep. So are they sleeping enough? What's their nutrition and food like? Again, we're in an age of fast food and greasy food. But what people don't realize is that the hormone serotonin, which is the feel-good drug in the body, and antidepressants are actually like serotonin tablets. So but serotonin, the vast majority of serotonin is produced in the gut, yet we're bombarding our gut with grease and sugar. Do you know what I mean? So another question I would be asking that person, are you eating a good balanced diet with plenty of nutrients? Are you exercising? Are you actually moving? Do you know what I mean? Are you getting out? Are you moving your body? If somebody's getting 8 hours sleep a night, they're eating well and they're exercising, but they're still feeling down, then yeah, I mean, by all means, it would be a good shout to go and speak with a professional. But yeah. I think with a lot of people, minor changes to their lifestyle can help them. I'm not saying it's going to prevent them from feeling down or feeling anxious, but sometimes small minor changes like that can really, really boost them. The cold water therapy, I think, is amazing for anxiety and stuff like, you know, I would be an overthinker. That's what anxiety is. Anxiety is kind of, you're always, your mind's, I would be a very chilled out person, as you know. But sometimes I find it hard to switch my mind off. You're always kind of constantly thinking and thinking ahead. Cold water just stops that straight away. You can't think about anything. It's that cold. Getting out in nature, I think, is great. I mean, all those things are very, very easy to change, and they're free. So therefore, they're accessible to everyone. So if you were to ask me, you know, tips on what I would suggest for mental health, I would say look at the basics of sleep, food, and exercise.
Okay, I'm just going to jump over here for, is there any other therapies that you want to talk about before I go into some of the questions sent in?
No, go ahead. So we'll start on the questions.
See just what I'm pulling them up. Will you let everybody know your social medias, where to get you?
Yes, so I'm on Facebook and Instagram as CM Sports Therapy. And you'll see the logo. It's like a white logo with a blue character running in it. I'm on Twitter as well, but to be honest, I don't really use it that much. I would say the main one would probably be Instagram. A thing I'm trying to do at the minute, Anto, is limit my time on the phone and on devices because I have to practice what I preach. So if people are sent me a message, it could take me a day or two to reply because there's times I just mute all notifications or put my phone on airplane mode and just cut down my own screen time too, you know. But yeah. That's where you can get me is Instagram or Facebook.
CM Therapy Sports.
CM Sports Therapy.
I always get that one mixed up. See on your phone, you know, you can go into your settings and there's like a wellness setting. And then you can limit the amount of screen time you get. See if you just go into your settings and there's a wee search bar at the top, type in wellness, and then each app, you can set how long you can be on each app for.
That's good to know, actually.
So, do that. Right. So, I'll go through some of the questions here. So, this one, you already sort of touched on it whenever you first come on. What's the most common sporting injury that you see?
Sporting injury, there's always the big three or four. Hamstring injuries are quite common, obviously. I think Belfast has so many football teams, Gaelic teams, running clubs, cycling clubs. And you're always, particularly with the footballers, I think the hamstring injuries are the big one. It's such a big muscle group as well. And then with Ireland's climate, you know, it's generally cold and people are maybe not warming up. They're just stripping from their tracksuit straight into their shorts, kicking a ball about and then going into a game where they've maybe jogged about a pitch, knocking a ball about to their mates. And then all of a sudden they're required to sprint So I think hamstring injuries is quite common. The shoulder as well. Shoulder, particularly for anyone that lifts weights, you would see kind of around the front of the shoulder, a rotator cuff area. That was a problem of mine during powerlifting too, was particularly with men, because we are kind of chest dominant. So just everyone wants to bench press, but they forget to look after the wee small muscles around the front of their shoulders or the rear delts. So I'd say the main one would either be, sporting wise, would either be hamstring or a shoulder injury of some sort.
Yeah. No. Training with injuries, right? So obviously most people who are in the like weightlifting or like a sport, if they get an injury, they'll sort of alter what they're doing to fit around the injury. Should you stop training altogether, or should you, what way should you approach it? Should you let your body fully recover, or should you just lighten the load? What would you recommend after seeing you, obviously?
Again, I think it's person specific. So you have a boxer, for example, that has signed up for a fight, and professional boxing is their main source of income. So they'll start like a fight camp and they're maybe training for 10 weeks. And during those 10 weeks, they're putting their body under so much stress. And then add on top of that, they're sparring. And they're sparring maybe 2-3 times a week. They are going to get injuries, and injuries do happen. But they have to, the show has to go on. They have to keep training. And they have to fight on fight night. Otherwise, they don't get paid. So you're always looking at ways to still train the body, still work, still do what they have to do. And we've had to do it in the past where people have broken bones and hands and what else? We've had a cracked rib during a fight camp, and the show has to go on. They have to train around it. But for somebody that's just training without a specific kind of target, as in a date or time defined target, I would say for your long-term goals, it's better to rest and recover than kind of force yourself on. And the thing with kind of muscle tears as well is you can maybe have a very small tear in the front of your leg, for example, and say, well, do you want to know what? I'm just going to keep squatting. I'm going to squat again tomorrow. But then that tear is going to become bigger and bigger. So you're also running the risk of making the injury worse. I would say your first step should always be to have it assessed by a professional, and they allow it to kind of rest initially, and then put a plan in place and how to train around it, and then more importantly, how to rehabilitate the muscle.
And placebo, how do you think that factors into recovery or therapies? Because I know some people listening are going to say, especially with like the NADA or the acupuncture, a lot of people think that that's a load of mad dogs. And it's just placebo.
I think that is the best question to date. Very, very good question. I think there is such a thing as placebo. There's a really, really good book called You Are the Placebo, where it's proven that people with, you know, there has been studies done with people with certain diseases and injuries, and they have been given a placebo tablet, like a sugar or saline solution tablet. And because they think that they're getting this new groundbreaking form of medication, they've almost thought themselves into recovery. It is a real thing. I know people think it's a wee bit airy-fairy, but it's that old saying, if you think you're right or you're wrong, you're right. Do you know what I mean? It's placebo does exist. I think it's probably, it's one of the most fascinating things that I like reading about and studying about, is kind of mindset. And again, some I've been lucky enough to work with some athletes where their mindset was all almost intoxicating. They're just so focused. They're so positive. They're so mentally strong. In terms of thinking, like, is acupuncture and all a load of shit? I suppose if you don't know anything about it and you're reading about it and you're thinking, how do they, like, what's chi? What's the flow of energy in the body? I can see why people go, yeah, that's a load of balls. But what you have to remember is this acupuncture's been around for thousands of years. Do you know what I mean? It's not, it isn't a new fad or a new kind of gimmicky tool. It's been around for centuries. And it's been used kind of on everyone from elite sports stars to the kind of celebrities, the royal families throughout the ages. And you have to ask yourself, why? Like, all these educated people use these forms of basic kind of therapies to look after body and mind. There has to be something to it. And anyone that's kind of the opinion that wouldn't work, I would suggest maybe giving it a try.
Yeah, I think you definitely need to, you have to have a follow-up and, you know, buy into it. You know, if you just think anything, if you do it half-hearted, you're only going to get half the results.
Yeah.
But next question, is there anything good, any good treatments that you'd recommend for anxiety?
The NADA ear puncture, acupuncture, as I said, one of the points in it is where people get the anxiety piercing. And you get a lot of people that come in to get the ear acupuncture done that would kind of fall asleep. It helps them switch off. I think sometimes just allowing yourself an hour to get treated, whether that's a deep tissue massage, even adding in hot stones or CBD oil, you have to understand there's people sometimes, say for example, and I'm just using this as an example, but say a single mother with two or three kids at home, or somebody, a guy that's maybe out of work at the minute because of lockdown, and life is genuinely stressful for them. They're full of anxiety. They're stuck in the house. Maybe it's a groundhog day. Kids are running mad. I think leaving the house, going to any massage therapist or anything they got, and just having an hour to yourself just to allow the body and mind to recover, I think the package in general of just getting out of the house and getting treated is very, very good for anxiety. If I would say massage or acupuncture for that one.
You know Randy Couture, the MMA fighter?
Yes, I do.
Right. So you know he said, see whether, you know, like you were saying, you get that serotonin release, you know, like say you eat a piece of chocolate or you get something new and you're all excited and you're all happy. He says, see the chemical reaction of when you're under stress, like your fight or flight, your anxiety, and that happy. He says, see that chemical reaction. He says, it's the exact, this is how he treated it, right? He says, it's the exact same chemical reaction. He says, it's how you deal with it. So if you're telling yourself, oh, this is bad, then it's going to be bad. Or if you're telling yourself, do you know what, I feel this way, but I feel this way when I'm happy, it's the same thing. That's how he used to deal with the stress of fighting. See, when he was in the cage, and he had them nerves, he just went to himself, this is like me buying a brand new car. It's the same thing.
Yeah. So the general term used for what he's describing there, the chemical cocktail, is fight or flight.
Yeah.
So you've two polar opposites. Do you fight or do you run away? And that chemical cocktail in the body it's amazing. So our bodies are unbelievable. When we go into that fight or flight mode, it's for one reason and one reason only, and that's survival.
Mm-hmm.
So that chemical cocktail in the body, when we go into fight or flight mode, goes back to the early man, you know, cavemen.
Yeah.
They're out hunting for their food, or they are warning off their family, or they're kind of protecting their family from attacking animals. So what happens is you become almost like superhuman. So your vascular system increases, you know, you can, your lung capacity increases, blood rushes to your muscles. But what he's saying there is you have two choices, fight or flight. The same chemical reaction will happen on everyone, but it's how you as an individual uses it or deals with it. But yeah, he makes a good point. Definitely it's interesting. The opposite of fight or flight is rest and digest. So, you know, going back thousands of years ago, we needed that fight or flight response to survive. Whereas now, it could be argued that for most people that live in the Western world that are quite comfortable, we don't need it as much. But statistics show that the average person's body is in fight or flight mode more often now than they were thousands of years ago, hundreds of years ago even. And this is what we're in an age of kind of stress. Stress is the number one killer. And you only have to look at Belfast suicide statistics. But that kind of that whole chemical release in the body of fight or flight mode, a lot of people are just living constantly in that mode. You know what I mean? That's completely unhealthy. We'll have to get used to being in rest and digest more than we are fight or flight.
Absolutely. Couple more just and we'll finish up here. Is there any, like, can you give any quick exercises that people can go and look up for functionality or mobility?
A thing that I am a big, big fan of is resistance bands. So with a resistance band, you can take most areas of the body. For your example of the shoulder, you can do, you can literally work all those wee tendons, ligaments in and around the shoulder, all your, the kind of, the unique rotator cuff ligaments, and you can work them and stretch them with a resistance band. And they're very affordable as well. They're on, I've got a recent wee batch there for clients off My Protein, and I think they were about £5 or £6 for two of resistance bands. Which are great. And anyone, I've already said, you know, about the social media pages, anyone that would like a couple of wee exercises or anything they got given to them, just, I know gyms and that aren't open at the minute, but just to kind of DIY, you know, move their body at home, just send me a message. There's obviously no charge to anything. Like, I'm more than happy to help people, show them how to move, kind of move their body in better ways. And as opposed to treating an injury, looking about kind of preventing injuries first and foremost.
Because believe it or not, like, see, whenever you give me them wee exercises, you know, with the dumbbell and stuff, I've actually done them. I know loads of people, like rehab, don't do it or don't stick to it, but that was one of the things that I done with you, that you gave me, that I followed through with. You know, I wasn't just going to go pay to get it done and then hope for the best. You know, you really have to follow it up with rehab, don't you?
Yeah, well, you're going to get the bay. So, you know, somebody comes in with a shoulder injury, and I have been there. I have been there with shoulder injuries, and I know how frustrating it is. And the thing that helped me was doing the small stuff every day, you know, doing the rehab with the resistance bands, doing the stretching. And it's a pain in the arse sometimes because you think, right, I'm here, you know, I'm ready to lift heavy again. But ultimately, you get humbled, you're not. And it's just a case of you have to see it as part of your routine now. It's part of your day as opposed to a chore.
Yeah. It's like that, if you do something for 90 days in a row, it just becomes automatic to you.
Yeah. Yeah. It becomes a habit almost.
Yeah. This is like a double question here. This is referring to like the athletes that you've treated. Who's the soundest? And you were saying there, which athlete had the best mindset of anybody?
Who's the soundest?
This is another way of saying you thought they were going to be a dick, but they weren't.
Well, I thought James Gallagher was going to be a bit of a dick, and I actually said to him, "You're not what I was expecting."
Yeah.
James Gallagher, as you know, is quite what's the I'm trying to be PC here. What I say, he's an image he portrays,
and he portrays it very, very well. Yeah.
He has a persona, but the thing is, he's one of the smartest and the most down to earth people I've treated, and that goes from athletes to anyone really. He's a wee gentleman, and I said to him, "You're not what I was expecting," and he just laughed and he says, "Listen, you have to understand that it's a business I'm in.
Yeah,
I get punched and kicked in the head for a living. I want to make my money while with my health still intact and then get out." Very, very smart, very down to earth, very humble, extremely humble. I would say he has been the most surprising. My preconception of what he was going to be and what he was like was polar opposites.
He really is the polar opposite, isn't he?
Yeah, which is fascinating because it gives you an insight into people seem to forget that it is a business. That is their full-time job. Do you know what I mean?
And he's promoting.
Yeah, it's fantastic promote, and I think, well, you would follow the MMA more than me, but James is very young. He's early 20, 22, 23 anyway. And the biggest, arguably the biggest UFC star in James.
Bellator.
Yeah, but it's his stablemate, Conor McGregor. And Conor McGregor, of course, is the prime example of building up that persona, that kind of, almost the way wrestlers did, you know, builds up this image of a persona and just runs with it, and it works really, really well.
I think see where that becomes tricky, and I think Conor's fallen into it. You then become the gimmick. I've never met Conor, but I met James and Marks and Spencer out in Sprucefield. It was just before his fight in February, and I'd seen him and I went, "Is that James?" I was like, I'll walk around, on the way back around. So I was walking around with my friends, and I just shouted, "Man, you all ready for February?" And for you, so like, he stood and talked to me and blah 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 and shook my hand and stuff. And I was like, I just tried not to take up too much of his time because I could see he was standing there. I think he was holding like bananas or melons or something. I was like, "Why are we stopping the fellow?" And
he's an absolute gentleman.
Really is.
What I treated James a couple of times before the show in Dublin. Do you remember he headlined a show in Dublin?
Yeah.
I was treating him on the run up to it. And as you do, I mean, you're spending an hour, maybe 2 hours with these people, and you talk and the conversation flows. And I had happened to mention about a young kid that lives in my street. He's severely disabled, and as a group of neighbours, we're all coming together to kind of raise money for a new wheelchair. This kid was basically, he's paralysed from the neck down, and we were raising money for this special wheelchair for him. And without being prompted, James, after the fight, sent his glove, saying glove to the kid. That just kind of speaks volumes of the guy. Do you know what I mean? He was brilliant. He sent the kid a message of support and on WhatsApp and that as well. And to me, that kind of speaks volumes. He was just a wee gentleman, and somebody had certainly surprised me.
Definitely. And what is there an athlete who you thought that they have an amazing mindset?
There's been a few. They all possess something. The stance would be, James Gallagher would be up there. Seth is amazing. It's just the ultimate professional. You know, failure is not an option to these people. The very, very top ones. So you'd look at the likes of Michael Conlon and James Gallagher, early 20s, but at the top of their game, or certainly going to the top. You know, they're in the process of taking that next step to be world champions. But they live every day as if they already are a world champion. And I don't mean in a cocky way. I mean, they're not drinking alcohol. They're just doing, they're training hard. They're surrounding themselves with positive people. They're they're doing what they have to do. If I was to pick one person with the best mindset that I have treated, it would be a young fella who, again, an MMA fighter, a guy called Paul Hughes. He's early 20s and undefeated. Paul's standout in terms of mindset. He studies mindset. He reads the books. He went to, you know, Paul is tipped to be a world champion, and he's been told by two different hand specialists that he was unable to fight due to a hand injury, and he refused to believe him and went to a third one again to get cleared to fight, and has came back from, I think, in his 5 or 6 professional fights, he has had nearly 20 opponents because the amount of people pulling out on him, and he just never, it never phases him. He's just uber dedicated, and an absolute gentleman into the bargain too.
Yeah, Paul Hughes, you fight out of Fed Academy Ireland up in Poglass, 5-0. So, one last thing, just here, literally, I was just checking there before I wrap this up. Somebody said about they've always wanted to go and see about getting like a consultation. Do you do like consultations by themselves, or what way does it work?
We can do, yes. So you can come in and discuss a problem or an injury or whatever, and get a bit of advice around it, and have it assessed initially with some basic testing, and get the likes of a price or going forward what it's going to take, how many sessions and that. Of course, that can be done. It's usually, what I would usually do is a very basic form of consultation over the phone before somebody arrives, just that we get a kind of a rough assessment of what we're going to be dealing with. And then when anyone arrives, there's a form I go through, and there's some kind of just general health questions. And then there's a chart, and I will get the person to draw on the body chart where they're feeling pain, where the pain radiates from, and we try and work out kind of there and then, you know, how their daily life and daily movements, maybe, you know, is it affecting their body? Do we need to make subtle changes? So I would do a bit of an assessment with everyone that comes in regardless, but if somebody was to look to come in just to be assessed, yeah, it wouldn't be a problem.
So, I let you go. I'll not keep you too much longer. Is there anything else that you want to get off your chest, or anything you want to talk about we haven't talked about?
No, mate. I think we got most stuff in. I think in this part of the world, it's becoming more and more prevalent that you can only train as hard as you recover. So people think that, you know, they can just push themselves in the gym every day and never really rest, but they will always hit a wall, you know, and every top athlete will tell you that, you know, like the top athletes factor in recovery every day. Every day, the top athletes factor in recovery, and it's about, for an athlete, they want to make the small changes everywhere. You know, if they can, they want to increase their quality of their sleep. They want to increase the micronutrients and nutrition they're getting. They want to increase their range of motion with their muscles. If you can start increasing different wee factors in your performance by just 1% here, 1% there, it all adds up. And I think recovery is starting to get, it's starting to get the acknowledgement it deserves. So the human body and mind is amazing. It's the most amazing machine on earth, but you have to allow it to recover at times. You can't just go 24/7 hell for leather, because if you do, your body is smart enough that you will get an injury and you will have to stop and it'll shut down. So I think we'll touch them on most things, but maybe just the end on that your body is only capable of training as hard as you allow it to recover.
Well, thank you very much for coming on that. For everybody who wants to contact Kieran, it's your CM Sports Therapy on Facebook and Instagram. If you want to send him a wee message about anything, feel free.
Yes, mate. Thanks for having me.
No problem. Hopefully, I'll have you back on soon again.
Yes, mate. It's good to chat, and I'll see you soon.
See you soon.
All the best, Nando.